All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. And as promised, we're still kind of looking big picture at these markets, diving into individual sectors with our generalist traders. This time, Dana Lyons. Dana is a fund manager and editor of the Lion Share Pro website. Now, Dana, last segment we had Rick Bensinger on the show, and he was mentioning how he was building up cash. And quite frankly, we are seeing markets rolling over even before this Iranian war. And one thing you've pointed us to is that that equal weight S&P was doing really well even as markets were flatlining. But I'm seeing that as down almost 5% just this month. Curious, Dana, do you agree with Rick? Is this the time to be sitting on some cash, trying to find some markets that maybe give us a little bit more direction rather than this range bound, if not lower trading we're seeing?
Yeah, at least the indicators, our models that we work with would also concur with that assessment. It's interesting that since a little minor blip back in November, our models have been pretty much rock solid and really confirming or being confirmed by the strength in the broad averages, something like the RSP, the equal weight average that you mentioned, and some of the smaller and mid-cap averages, the value line averages that continue to move to new highs even as the larger caps were stagnant. So those types of broad averages really correlate well with our intermediate term risk model, which is really designed to capture what the overall broad market is doing. Are the majority of stocks moving up or down? And it's been very constructive. Our model's been constructive since May, like I said, except for that little blip in November. And interestingly enough, a couple weeks ago, we started seeing some cracks in some of the indicators that comprise our model. And it was interesting because many of the averages, the indices themselves, had been hanging in there pretty firmly, some of the broad averages. But we're seeing some the signs of some cracks underneath the surface. And that was even, like you mentioned, before this Iranian conflict even broke out. So there were some warning signs ahead of time. And then last week, things really deteriorated. We got a sell signal in our model last week. So we were able to get at least a little bit defensive, raise some cash, like you mentioned, add some hedges last week ahead of some of the worst selling over the last week or so. So I don't believe the risk has dissipated. I think there's still near-term risk, certainly in the markets. On the other hand, I don't think this will lead to a sustainable correction or bear market. I think we do probably have a good chance of seeing new highs again in many of the averages before the ultimate top is in place and we start dropping on, like I said, on a more sustained basis.
Well, Dana, let's unpack that last idea you just talked about, because there's a lot of financial media running with, this is the end. You know, AI bubble has popped and software is dead and, you know, job losses are coming in and GDP is dropping. There's all this narrative around how the economy is going to roll over now with geopolitics. It's just complicating it. But you're still more optimistic than almost anybody I've heard as far as still thinking we can hit higher highs in the market. Even some of the generalists we've talked to that are normally bulls are a little bit more bearish now. What gives you the confidence that we could keep going up and making a higher high before maybe putting in a top?
Yeah, the reason is we really see at the recent highs, we didn't see necessarily a lot of divergences, like longer term divergences that we normally see at major cyclical or secular pops in the market. We saw, like I mentioned, pretty unanimous confirmations and new highs in broad indicators like the NYSE advanced decline line, in measures like the, like I mentioned, the value line arithmetic average, which tracks the average stock in the market, to things like the equal weight index that you mentioned. We saw a lot of these broad measures hitting new highs just recently before this latest downturn. And that's not something you see at the ultimate top, at the final top. You usually see more of a deterioration in some of those broader measures, some of the foundational measures before that ultimate top, so that ultimately that final top in, say, the S&P 500 is a very thin one, really carried by a relatively small number of stocks. And that's certainly not what we saw recently at the recent highs. And take it a step beyond just the breadth in issues, you look at the majority of markets, like international markets around the globe, the number of markets that were recently hitting new highs. Now, everything's selling off right now during this little correction, and certainly more risk here in the near term. But I think with everything coming off of all-time highs, you'll see some back and forth. You'll see runs to new highs. You'll see probably another up leg here, at least before that ultimate top is in place. And it should be, like I mentioned, it should be accompanied by a lot more non-confirmations and divergences before any ultimate, you know, major top is in place.
So does that, in summary, mean that now is a good time to be buying, or do we need to wait for some sort of a turn to take advantage of this weakness?
This ultimately in this correction, we'll be looking for opportunities to buy for sure. We are pretty heavily hedged right now, but we'll be looking for an any extension and any tests of the recent lows, or I think we have further downside below those prior lows that we can hit for a better chance or more durable near-term low. But we'll certainly be looking at opportunities to cover some of those hedges and add to good relative strength names that are just coming off of all-time highs, pulling back towards levels that were represent probably like recent breakout areas to all-time highs. So yeah, we will be looking for opportunities to add further exposure ahead of another potential up leg before, like I mentioned, that ultimate top is in place. But right now, I think there certainly is near-term risk for sure. So we're not out there buying a lot of dips right now. We're not aggressively looking for opportunities. Right now, we do see a lot of downside. Well, maybe not a lot of downside. We see downside in a lot of areas, though, potentially before a more solid setup for a bottom is in place. But I would say the one constructive thing is some of the sentiment indicators, especially in the volatility market, are already pretty well along the spectrum towards overly bearish reading. So that's one positive thing. And certainly the proliferation of negative and pessimistic news headlines certainly feeds into that and could help bring about a near-term bottom sooner than later.
Well, Dana, so you're looking for some short-term weakness, but then eventually you will be redeploying. As far as the hedges, just to give people a flavor of what you do with your service when you're talking to your subscribers, how do you put hedges on? Are you using inverse ETFs or using options trading? Maybe talk about what your hedging strategy is right now in the current weak environment, and then when you pull those off, what you'll do to reverse that.
Sure. So for our clients, 99% of what we use is ETFs. So right now we have a number of inverse ETFs deployed, like you mentioned, things covering the NASDAQ 100, the S&P, and the Russell 2000 at the moment. Also contemplating some short position in the high yield market, which did give a heads up. I guess that would be one area that we did see kind of a divergence at the recent top. Saw high yield kind of fail to confirm the recent top, and that has pulled back a little bit earlier than the rest of the market. So that was a warning sign, and we may add a hedge there, as well as certainly a lot of the risk embedded in the market outside of just geopolitical is in that credit market and the high yield market.
Daniel, let's get into the market that's been on everyone's radar, that being oil. Boy, oh boy, crude is all over the place, and it is moving off of tweets, off of press conferences, and off of news stories, some of which you don't even know what to believe out there right now. But the fact of the matter is, this Iran war has clearly pushed oil higher. What do your models tell you about where the price is going from here?
Yeah, we haven't really modeled the price of oil. That's a tough one, really, for us. I would say, well, first I'll mention that obviously that is more subject to headline risk, the price of oil and geopolitical exogenous events like we're seeing now. So really impossible to predict. And really, it's a fool's game trying to invest in oil based on headlines, because you don't have, unless you have inside information, you don't know what headline is coming out next and what that's going to do to the price of oil. So how high can it go? I have no idea. Probably higher than we think, because you look on the downside, who would have thought it would have traded below $0, back during COVID. So I wouldn't even venture a guess or a prediction as to the price of oil. But I would say in terms of energy equities, and we talked about this probably a month ago in the show, how energy equities were setting up nicely after, a nice rally about, I guess, into the top in 2022, and then sideways for a while, forming kind of a long-term cup and handle together with that high back about 12 years ago, setting up eventually a nice breakout, and considering the length of that base, perhaps a long-term significant breakout with significant upside. We did recently see that breakout in energy stocks, and I think they probably have a long way to go in terms of time as well as upside potential. So that's one area that is certainly has remained strong here, even in the correction within the rest of the equity market, and does have long-term potential as far as we're concerned.
Well, Dana, we got a lot of people asking questions about oil stocks right now, so let's maybe spend even a little bit further, deeper dive on it. When you look at something like XLE, the ETF of the big producers, we've been making the point to a number of guests that, hey, this thing really skyrocketed starting this year. Like, if you look at January and February and March, it's a rocket ride higher. And a lot of this was happening before all of this geopolitics started. Some people even noted that they were feeling like the oil stocks were getting a little top heavy and a little pricey. But to the point you made about the large breakout, the cup and handle breakout, do you have any targets for how far up that would extrapolate out in either price or time?
Well, like I said, we topped out, if you're talking about XLE, topped out around $50 back in 2014, had a big bear market for the next half decade. And then following that, like I mentioned, we rallied strongly into that 2022 top, close to that $50 level again. And from there, really for the last half decade, have really gone sideways, have gone nowhere. And to use that, the bad pun again, really have been refueling in those energy stocks for a breakout and a more sustainable run. And that's what we've seen. I think we did in this recent breakout and run, we were looking for up around that 57-ish area, like where we're at now, as that first target in mind. It's held up, it's held those gains pretty well, and wouldn't be necessarily chasing this thing higher, but any sort of a small retracement pullback would be looking to add to that position. And ultimately above there, I would say we could easily be up into the low to mid 70s on that next leg higher. So again, after about 11 or 12 years of pretty much sideways action, that creates substantial potential on the upside, both again in terms of price appreciation as well as time for a sustained up move. So that's something that certainly, even if we're extended in the short term, should have much more long-term potential ahead.
All right, Dana, we always like to ask about the other metals. So let's talk gold. Gold still in a range, kind of at the top part of its range. It has put in some higher lows ever since that big drop at the very end of January. What do your models tell you? Any chance that, I know you trade GLD, the GLD gets back to those all-time highs from early January?
Yeah, I think there certainly is a chance. I think this precious metals complex has kind of played out according to script, really, based on what we've been talking about since the beginning of the year. Specifically, you look at some of the metals and miners action that saw really into that top in late January, really were displaying signs of a real frothy bubble, you know, something that was not sustainable, something that was really evidence of a bubble, like I mentioned. And that was really more in terms of metals like platinum and palladium, which we thought on the pullback probably wouldn't see the those highs anytime soon. And then down the spectrum, silver kind of in that same realm, given the extent of the pullback. And like we mentioned at a couple months ago, the key was to measure or observe really the extent of the pullback and then also the magnitude of any subsequent bounce. So silver really pulled back the most, and its bounce has been really pretty shallow in terms of the magnitude of the pullback that it retraced. So I don't hold out much hope for the price of silver getting back to the highs anytime soon. Gold is a different story. Gold's been a little bit better, really retraced about, you know, 61% of that, of the pullback in late January. I think it's got a decent chance of getting back to the highs eventually. And then the best, probably position the best, would be the miners, gold miners and silver miners, which, yeah, they suffered a sharp pullback, you know, in that January to February pullback, but nothing on the order of really the price of silver, for example, and even more importantly, got back to test or even exceed those highs in that recent bounce, you know, over the last month or so. So I think that the gold and silver miners are really well positioned eventually here to hit new highs and put in a new up leg once this, you know, kind of shakeout regime has run its course. There might be some further near-term volatility here, but again, I think there's a good chance for new highs in those miners and a new up leg there.
Yeah, it is impressive that they held up a lot better than the metals on the pullback, and then they rallied back higher, and some of them did break out, some of the ETFs, to higher levels than they did in January just a couple weeks ago. So interesting to see the strength in the mining stocks. Just back to silver, though, it's got so much interest on our site and just in the media lately. To your point, it really shot up high and it corrected a lot further down to the low side. So it went from 121 on the futures down to 64, and its rebound didn't impress people. But it's actually gotten stuck in this sideways channel. So I'm just curious, from a technical perspective, when you see a chart go really high, then go really low, and then settle in between the two and channel sideways, that's building up energy for a break one way or the other. Are you assuming then that the break is to the downside?
If I had to make a bet, I would say yes, just because the retracement on the upside was, we didn't even, you know, retrace 50% of what we lost from that late January high. So right now we still have a long position in SLV, for example. We're still looking at around that in SLV, still looking at that $72 level is kind of the line in the sand for us. As long as we're above there, we have a chance to move higher. If we do break that level, then I would say there's a reasonable chance that we end up pulling back down towards that $50 level or the upper 40s. So right now, like I said, I'm not holding my breath for silver to go back to the former highs. I'm certainly much less optimistic about the price of silver than I am silver miners and gold miners for that matter. So right now, yeah, we're in kind of a sideways trading range, and I really wouldn't get too aggressive one way or another. But like I mentioned, that $72 level, I would keep my eye on that.
All right. Very similar to what Rick had to say, actually, as well. That's just what the charts are telling us. What about for copper? Copper has moved sideways this whole year in a fairly tight range, maybe a bull flag. The longer term chart still definitely looks good, but the shorter term, again, just choppy sideways action. What do you think about copper or even the copper miners?
Yeah, probably. Copper itself, probably a little bit more optimistic on that one than silver. Probably less optimistic than I am in gold. Copper miners, I would say Probably somewhere in between. I like the silver miners and the gold miners a little bit better than the copper miners at this point. I don't have just a small position in junior copper miners left, but I guess that's where I would kind of place it in the hierarchy of things. So not I don't have the biggest bets that we have right now in the complex would be gold and silver miners and much smaller position, much more conviction, I guess, in copper and those miners.
Well, sometimes they ask you about uranium, and I know that you've used the ETFs URA or URNM. Any thoughts on the uranium sector? It's been in kind of a corrective mode, but just love to get your thoughts on it if you have any.
Yeah, sure. We have been long uranium and uranium miners for a while. They did, I would say they did constructively after a rough, I guess, fourth quarter last year, did make it back to new all-time highs, which was good to see. I would say uranium, the miners have pulled back a little bit more than I would have wanted. They're probably URNM is right at a key level right now, around that $67 level. So that's a key spot for us, kind of a line in the sand. If you zoom out a little bit, they're still hitting higher highs, higher lows, which is probably a constructive sign in the longer term. Shorter term, they did hit a lower low recently. So I would say in the longer term, I'm fairly constructive on that space still, but I would say near term, there's still significant risk there. So I wouldn't hold my breath for new highs anytime soon. But again, term still constructive on that space.
Dana, what else are we looking at out there? Any opportunities of that rotation of money into sectors that you see as good sectors, quite frankly? It just seems like a whole lot of wait and see right now.
Yeah, well, there. I would say the good thing is, like I mentioned, there the absence of a lot of major divergences at the recent top give us some confidence that we haven't seen the ultimate highs in the market. We should have a good opportunity for new highs to come. And another positive, I guess, set of conditions is the fact that there are areas of the market that have held up reasonably well. We're not seeing everything getting thrown out here with the bathwater. Even if it's defensive stocks, utilities have held up well. So defense names obviously have held up well. Even areas over the last month, you've seen breakouts again in the energy space. You've seen breakouts in the materials space. Consumer staples broke out. They have pulled back towards that breakout level. So not a bad entry point right here in something like the consumer staples and materials approaching an opportunity there as well. And then a couple other names I would give you. I guess the S&P low volatility space, SPLV would be the ticker symbol, had a nice breakout as well recently. These are some of the newer kind of relative strength names. Nice breakout. They've pulled back towards the breakout area. Not a bad entry point around here. And even something like the NASDAQ 100X technology, QQXT would be the ticker symbol, had a nice breakout, showing nice relative strength, especially against the NASDAQ 100 in general, had a nice breakout, pulled back, testing that breakout level right now. So I would say there are enough, zooming out a little bit, there are enough areas that have recently broken out. Even if they're in a short-term pullback, along with the broader market, that are in a constructive enough position right now that we could make a run at new highs eventually before any ultimate top is in place. So again, short-term risk, but I think there are going to be opportunities going forward in the intermediate term.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of investors choosing value over growth right now. Even that one ETF you mentioned that stripped out the tech, same kind of concept. So with materials and utilities and energy and consumer staples doing good, people kind of seeking that safer play, but nice to see it broadening out. What about internationally? I know that you track a lot of ETFs for individual countries or sometimes emerging market funds. Anything internationally catching your interest?
Yeah. Again, short term, most areas of the market are getting hit, and that would include the international markets. which have not certainly have not avoided the recent correction in conjunction with this geopolitical conflict. With that being said, again, while there is near-term risk there, like we talked about, I think a couple weeks ago, some of the longer-term trends certainly seem to be tilting towards value versus growth, and that would have probably years of potential in it. And the same thing with international versus domestic. The U.S. has dominated that ratio really for almost decades now. I think we might be seeing a turn in terms of that ratio that would give many of the international markets, emerging and developed around the world, potentially a leg up versus the US going forward for years to come, notwithstanding again some short-term risk, because we were really extended in a lot of those international markets before the recent top, and certainly do have further downside unwind potential here. But I think longer term, still looking at a lot of the international markets for a good chunk of our exposure.
All right, Dana, as always, great chatting with you. Thanks for going around the horn with us. A lot of different markets that we talked about on this weekend show, and I hope everyone listening found some value in this weekend show, trying to make sense of what is a definitely more challenging market compared to last year. Headline driven, but also a loss of momentum almost across the board, it feels like. Again, if you want to follow along with Dana, search LionShare Pro or click the links in the weekend show notes. And everyone, thanks for tuning into this weekend show. Please go back through our website. Search for us in your podcast player or on YouTube. Just search The KE Report. You can listen to all our daily editorials and company updates from throughout the week, as well as this full weekend show. Dana, again, thanks for your time on this weekend show. And everyone, thanks for tuning in. I hope you all have a great rest of your weekend.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.